What is up, Vermont Edition podcast listener? This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for VPR. Just to let you know, this podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. In the last week or so, Vermont has seen an increase in the number of coronavirus cases. State officials say more younger people are getting infected these days, and it's happening at a time when a larger number of older Vermonters are getting vaccinated. Mike Pichek is the commissioner of the Department of Financial Regulation and is responsible for tracking state and regional COVID statistics and trends.
And we are seeing some of these trends here in Vermont. For example, this week we crossed the 19,000 case threshold. We recorded our single highest case day since the pandemic began. We must also recognize and acknowledge how fortunate we are to have the vaccine available to us and how fortunate we are to have made so much progress, particularly with those that are the most vulnerable as we see this uptick in cases.
Why are more young people testing positive? What are the factors driving this trend? Is it too early to point to the recent lessening of some restrictions? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan. Commissioner, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Just want to mention at the start that we've had a small change in our schedule here at Vermont Edition that's beginning this week. And it'll likely last for several months as we prepare for a relaunching of Vermont Edition towards the end of the summer with our new co-hosts. And they are Michaela Lefrak and Connor Cyrus. So starting today, our program focusing on pandemic issues with members of the Vermont Health Department will shift from Tuesday to Wednesday. Then we'll have another live show on Thursdays. For instance, tomorrow is our annual baseball show. And then filling out the week will be the governor's COVID press briefings on Tuesdays and Fridays. And then on Mondays, we'll be reserving that time for special NPR and VPR programs. We want you to know that we're really excited about the future of Vermont Edition with our two new co-hosts. I think you're really, really going to enjoy them. Back to the pandemic. Commissioner, the number of COVID cases in Vermont is on the rise. It's not older people getting sick because many of them have been fully vaccinated. It's younger people who are getting infected. Why is this happening?
Well, it's the magic question that we're all asking. We think it could be a variety of things. We don't have one clear answer. We do think that the variant could be playing a role here. We know certainly that based on the genome sequencing that was done a little while ago, that we certainly saw the variant among some cases at UVM. And we know that the variant increases transmission up to 50%. And so that could be at play here. The other piece, of course, is that there is some COVID fatigue happening. People are getting excited about vaccination. And I think there might be a premature relaxing among people in terms of mask wearing, social distancing, and gathering. And so we really want to keep urging people there to continue to do all those things. We really are in our last stretch, but we are not quite there yet. We have a lot of people vaccinated in Vermont, but not to the extent yet where we can tell people to change those really important behaviors. So those are probably two key pieces. We're also doing a lot more testing, I would add. And so the testing, of course, you know, a high volume of testing is going to results in more cases as we find them. And our positivity rate has ticked up a little, up to 2%. Still relatively low overall, but as you can imagine, the numbers are somewhat concerning.
So are there some steps that the state is taking now, some specific steps to address the fact that so many young people are turning out to being infected?
I mean, one of the things that we've done, and you can probably see this from our vaccine schedule, with more doses coming in and our projections that we will continue to get a good supply, we have been able to move up the age groupings. And so particularly among this young group, April 19th is the magic day where people can sign up. And so we're excited for that day and to see that we will have an opportunity for young people to get vaccinated. We're also seeing that it appears certainly among the people we have surveyed, that young people have a high desire to get the vaccine. So we're excited about that and hoping that we see a really great uptake. And then the other thing, as you can imagine, or you can hear Dr. Levine saying repeatedly, is to just really encourage people to mask carefully, to continue to stay apart by at least 6 feet, and to continue to be aware of crowded spaces. I mean, those are kind of the key pieces. It's really what people have been doing, but to really hunker down, do them well, and hold for this last stretch.
Do you think it's too early to say that lifting restrictions at bars and restaurants could be a factor?
I don't know if we can say that's a factor. I mean, I think that is one thing we'll be looking at as we look at those changes in the numbers. Because there are so many variables coming in at the same time, the fatigue, also the variant, it will be hard to say any one factor is driving this. The change in the bars, again, really does mirror some of the restaurant restrictions around really needing still to stay at a table and to stay apart, not mingling so much. So it's hard to know, but we're hopeful that the kind of restrictions that were lifted in some of the facilities don't necessarily facilitate a lot more mixing among groups, but just allowing groups to go out, you know, again with their sort of household or group, and then still maintain that spacing, even in public areas where some restrictions have been lifted.
You mentioned COVID fatigue. What do you think when you see pictures of spring break in Florida and thousands of young people on the beaches, no masks, or you see other states, the state of Texas that effectively ended mandatory mask wearing? When you see those situations, are you concerned that it starts to add to the COVID fatigue of folks in Vermont?
Well, I'm very concerned, first of all, for the people that I see in the pictures, because every one of those is a potential case. And again, even though people may get this, they may be asymptomatic, and in a lot of cases may have mild disease, we do know that there are some significant long hauler effects, and we don't know how many people that affects, but we know it could be anywhere from 10 up to 30%. And so I worry about that for those people in the photos. I do worry about how it impacts others. Because, of course, when you look at a photo, you don't know what's happening 3 or 4 weeks later. And the media doesn't always, of course, track down all those people and tell you how they're doing. So, yes, I do worry. I think we're all human beings, and it is a natural desire to get together. And when you see other people getting together, you see more people getting vaccinated, it is a natural urge to want to just go ahead and do that. But, again, we're very close. And if we can just hold a little longer and get through these next few weeks, hopefully we will be in a better place.
Commissioner, we have a ton of people who have sent us some emails. Let's see if we can work through that list. We've got some very good questions from our listeners. One of them involves the state of Texas. This is from Larry, who notices that about a month ago, Governor Abbott effectively ended mandatory mask wearing and physical separation in Texas. And Larry is wondering, have you been able to follow what's happened to infection rates, hospitalizations, and deaths? Have these numbers soared? Do we have any evidence about that?
You know, I don't have the other state positivity rates in front of me, so I probably won't be able to speak to trends in other states. What I can say is nationally, and we got this report from CDC this morning, nationally cases are going up. So while part of that may be the variant, we know for sure that masks are effective. The evidence is very clear on that. The extent to which they're effective really depends on how many people wear them, how well they're worn. But we're very clear on the effectiveness of masks. That is not in question. So reducing mask wearing at a time when cases are going up is never a good idea. And I can only assume as cases go up, if you're in an area where masks aren't required, that is contributing to it.
We got this email from Patricia, something I think a lot of people are thinking about. If I'm fully vaccinated and then several weeks pass by, do I need to continue to wear a mask? What's the point in getting vaccinated if I still have to wear a mask? If the masks protect the unvaccinated, then only they should have to wear one. Otherwise, do masks really work? What's your advice to Patricia?
Yeah, masks really work. I'd ask you to visit the Department of Health website to learn a little more about that and to look into the science. But yes, after you're vaccinated, once you've reached full vaccination, which would be 2 weeks after your last shot, so if that's a Johnson & Johnson shot, that's 2 weeks after that shot. If it's Moderna or Pfizer, it's 2 weeks after your second shot. Once you're fully vaccinated, you can be with other fully vaccinated people unmasked. However, if you're going out in public and you're around other people, you don't know their status. And again, the vaccine is highly effective, but not 100%. And so we know that some breakthrough cases can occur. Those numbers are small and we're tracking them, but they are occurring. And so really the key to the vaccine is that it protects you almost 100% from death and hospitalization. It protects you highly from even moderate disease. And protects you a lot from even an asymptomatic disease, although you may have it sometimes. It also significantly reduces the ability for you to transmit to other people because you have a much lower viral load, if at all. So it is an effective vaccine, but not 100%. And because not everyone is vaccinated yet, or not most people, it's still very important to do the masking.
Let's talk to Beth, who is calling from Stratford. Hi, Beth. Welcome to the program.
My question is there an option other than a cell phone app for asking for a replacement COVID vaccination card if you have lost, melted in the washing machine, or in any other way disabled the card you originally got? There's got to be more people out there than me who have no cell coverage and can't read the screens on those things anyway. And have done one of those things.
Commissioner, what happens to someone who loses their vaccination card?
That's a great question. So it sounds like this is after the second vaccination and they've lost their card. And, I have not come across that question yet. As we go through this, we live and learn. And so I would say at this point, give a call to the vaccine call center. If they don't have the answer, they'll be able to record your question. And we can pursue that within our vaccine program and figure it out. But I don't have a quick answer for you now, except to say call the call center and report that in, leave your number. And what we might be able to do is figure out if that's a frequent question. We might even be able to get that up on our frequently asked questions page, but we should be able to assist.
And what do you see as the future use of those cards once somebody has been fully vaccinated and has that documented on their card? Do you see in the future some way that those cards are going to be put into use?
I mean, certainly now when you have a card, it's for your own information. You're able to let your provider know with other vaccines. So it's a way for the healthcare community to kind of keep track and for you to keep track. We are hearing that some states are looking at requiring it. Governor Scott has suggested people hang on to them as we look at travel and other kinds of guidelines, but I don't think we've hammered out yet exactly how will they be used. However, we would suggest keep it with you, carry it on you when you travel. At this time, we have not yet released any guidelines about how we would use that, but certainly recommend people hang on to them. Laminating them is a great idea. A lot of people have been asking about that. Go ahead and laminate it, put it in your wallet, and more to come on whether or not we will actually be asking people to produce those at any time. But for now, hang on to it.
Commissioner, we got this email from Diane. Can you still be asymptomatic and pass on the virus even if you've completed your vaccination cases?
That's a great question. You can be, so you can get COVID even if you're vaccinated. Again, not as common, right? Because the vaccine is very effective. You can get COVID and therefore you could get an asymptomatic infection. And theoretically, you could pass it on. Now, all of these risks get lower as we talk. So if you're fully vaccinated, a lower risk of getting it. And if you're asymptomatic, probably a lower risk of passing it on due to viral load. But again, all of that is possible because, again, the vaccine isn't 100%. So some people ask, why get it? The reason you get it is because it greatly reduces the chance of all of those things happening. But the reason we're asking people to continue to mask right now is that there still is a chance until we get to the point where we've got more herd immunity, and then that percentage and risk drops significantly.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Jack, who is calling from Paulett. Hey, Jack, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to be on the air.
What's your question today?
My question is, well, I listened to the press briefing yesterday, and I was curious on one of Governor Scott's positions. He said that there was a question from a reporter, I forget which one, but basically asking Scott, even with case numbers going up right now, is that affecting your school opening policy and opening the state back up? And he said, no, I'm set on doing that. So I'm just curious as to what exactly would make things roll back. And, like, also hearing about Europe going back into lockdowns with more cases, and our cases are going up here, but we're just on the straight and narrow for reopening. So I guess
okay.
What would make him change his mind, and who, what's the cohesion there?
Okay, Jack, it's a question I'm sure that's on a lot of people's minds as they see the increase in the number of cases, particularly among younger people. Commissioner, everything on track for schools to reopen after the April break? And as Jack said, what are some of the factors that you're keeping an eye on?
Yeah, and again, you know, it is a question that's on everybody's mind. It's a really natural question. You see numbers go up and you wonder about our future plans. I think the governor is clear that he has continued to set the goal of, a gradual reopening and getting schools back in. However, I can tell you that the governor sits in every day and listens into our health operations center. He listens to the epidemiology team update. And so he is aware as much as we are of where we are and really weighs that and considers that on a regular basis. So he does have a clear plan, but I also know that he is always continually open to understanding how all the numbers and the epidemiology affect those plans. But as we sit right now, we do know that deaths are way down, hospitalizations are going down, and we know that the most vulnerable Vermonters are vaccinated. And as we see more and more vaccine opening up and the age groups dropping, we also recognize that we've got a high percentage of teachers now vaccinated, a very high percentage. So there is a real protection that's going to be happening in the schools. A lot of the transmission that you see that's reflected in young people is actually coming from the community. And we're really in this tricky spot, this gray zone. But this month, we're going to see significant vaccination. And we did learn from some countries, Israel is one good example. Once they hit the 50% rate on vaccination, they saw their cases drop very quickly. And we anticipate, again, not sure, but we anticipate that we will likely see a case drop once we hit those higher vaccination numbers. So there's a lot of factors at play. And I can tell you that, of course, the governor wants to set some clear goals and continue to aspire toward what he's working on. But I also know that he's very much listening to the science and weighing everything as he continues forward.
You know, at one of the recent press briefings, Education Secretary Dan French mentioned how low the positivity rate was among all the teachers and school staff who had been tested. It was remarkably low. I think it was a tenth of what the statewide rate is. Why do you think that's the case?
Yeah, well, you know, the teachers obviously take their jobs very seriously. They are not just protecting themselves and their families, but protecting kids in the classroom. And I mean, we all owe an incredible gratitude to teachers for continuing to bolster up our education system, a lot of them in person, at least part-time through this past year. So I think the teachers represent, possibly a relatively healthy workforce as well, taking a lot of precautions and then working in schools. But there's a lot of regimentation in schools around the protections in a way that there isn't when we're out just in the community. I mean, there are really clear rules around the kids wearing masks. There's a lot of provisions put in place to make sure that they stay apart from each other. So there is a lot of protection in the school environment, and then the teachers themselves possibly being a generally healthier population, and then just they taking, you know, really great strides to keep themselves, their families, and the kids healthy. So that was good to see those lower rates. And then, of course, really great to see the teachers eagerly getting vaccinated and seeing really high rates there as well.
Let's talk to Peggy, who's calling from Norwich. Hi, Peggy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. I have a couple of questions, both related to each other. I'm wondering how many cases you have documented now of people who were fully vaccinated and then got COVID. I know last week Dr. Levine mentioned 25, and I wondered if that number had increased. And then I wondered if you are testing, you know, these people who did get sick and were fully vaccinated. I wondered if you're trying to test to see if they had a variant, because that might be one way of determining how effective our vaccines are continuing to be against these new variants.
Commissioner, I think you mentioned a little earlier in the program that someone who is fully vaccinated could still be infected, although their symptoms might be milder. Is that correct? Do I have that right?
Yes, you have that right.
And so what about Peggy's idea of are we monitoring people who have been fully vaccinated who have still been infected, and what can be done about that?
Yeah, we are definitely tracking those numbers to see what that population looks like. I don't know if we're doing genome sequencing. In this case, it may be after the fact. And so I'm not sure that we're doing genome sequencing on individuals to determine which variant they had. Our genome sequencing is primarily meant to get a sense and predict our population approach. But we are continuing to track. And I know the number was 25 a week ago. It's obviously gone up. But I do not believe there's been a steep increase in that. We will, of course, continue to see that number go up as more people get vaccinated. But it may not go up as a percentage. We got great news from, Pfizer and Moderna over the last few weeks showing not only very high vaccination coverage after the second shot, which, of course, is the most important time, but even high coverage after that first shot. Of course, we continue to recommend, of course, two shots, and then after 2 weeks, that's your full protection. So we're continuing to see really good numbers on protection. But yes, there are some breakthrough cases.
Got another email asking about should people be concerned about which vaccine they're scheduled to get? Should they try to request a certain vaccine based on their own health histories? What's your advice there?
Oh, you know, it's funny. We were just talking about this the other day. I was talking with our vaccine chief, and we're continually talking to CDC and looking at the data. All three vaccines are safe in terms of which vaccine you should get. All three are safe. However, we do know that there are some people for whom their primary care doctors have recommended one vaccine or another. We've had several where their primary care doctors have recommended that they get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And we certainly respect that and recognize that. And so as more Johnson & Johnson becomes available, we think we will have ways to make that more available for people if they choose that, particularly if their primary care doctors referencing it. But really, the only questions you have to think about are the ones that are listed or asked when you sign up for an appointment. And that's really the important questions about whether or not you've had an anaphylactic reaction to having a vaccine before, or a severe immediate reaction to a vaccine, or whether or not you're allergic to some of the components in the vaccine that are listed. And so you can go to our website to learn a little more about that. You can also talk to your primary care doctor. But if you haven't had those situations and you're not answering yes to those questions, all three vaccines are safe for you.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Sam, who's calling from Bennington. Hey, Sam, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Yes, my question was, in the press conference yesterday, Governor Scott said that out-of-state college students will not be eligible for the vaccine, and I was just wondering how that fits into his broader plan of wanting to make sure that everyone who is in Vermont, like, has the vaccine, because it doesn't really make sense to me if the people that are living here but aren't residents aren't able to get it.
Sam, that's a great question. Commissioner, you've got some of the universities in Vermont, you've got a majority of the students there coming from out of state. So by not vaccinating that group of students, are you leaving the possibility of infection spreading through that group of people?
You know, we very much would like to be able to vaccinate everyone right now. If we had enough vaccine, we would do that. We'd like to be able to vaccinate people who are here from out of state, particularly college students. We know that, you know, rates are being driven in part by that younger population right now. However, we simply don't have enough to provide to everyone, and we continue to have to make hard priority decisions and are right now, as of April 19th, when that age group opens up, and again, that's largely the college age group, we'll need to prioritize Vermont residents first. We don't have reciprocation in other states where Vermont residents will necessarily get vaccinated by other states. So we don't have a way of shifting those numbers and recognizing that our allocation can absorb this. So we really have to look at our allocation, look at the number of Vermonters, and as soon as we have enough vaccine where we can meet the demand, we will move to the out-of-staters. We are hopeful that happens sooner rather than later, but realistically, when that younger age group opens up on April 19th, we are not sure that we will have enough vaccine. And if we don't, we will not be vaccinating out-of-state residents. This isn't new in terms of this age group. This is actually consistent for all of our categories. In almost every case, you need to be a Vermont resident. We only have a couple of exceptions. One is if you work in the category 1A as a healthcare worker here, or if you're an educator here, or if you've gotten a first vaccine out of state and have no other option, you know, you may be able to be considered there. But for the most part, I wanted to just state that these are hard, hard decisions when we can't say yes to everyone. And we are hopeful that we will be able to say yes eventually. But by the time we've got enough vaccine, it's possible that a lot of those students may have gone back to their home states.
Let's talk to Sarah, who's calling from Essex. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm asking, well, first of all, I'll state what I think is true, that at a maximum we have 90 days of the conferred immunity when fully vaccinated. So my question, is that true? And if so, what is the public health plan to address essentially the vaccines are timing out after 90 days maximum?
Yeah, the 90 days, that's really about where we are in the process of studying these vaccines. So you will likely see that number increase as we go. I think the early numbers showed 90. That may have even changed by now, but that's really as we roll out this population, as we roll out the vaccine to the population, you will likely see that number shift. But I believe early on we're saying 90 days, and then that will likely, you know, increase. And so you are fully vaccinated 2 weeks after, and it is likely that this vaccine lasts a long time, but we don't know how long yet because it is a relatively new vaccine. We don't know, for example, if there will be a requirement for boosters in the future, and that's something that all the vaccine manufacturers are studying and looking at along with CDC.
And along that line, Commissioner, earlier in the program, you talked about the importance of holding on to your vaccination card and perhaps even having it laminated. We had one of our listeners say, hey, what's going to happen if I get it laminated and I have a booster shot coming up, then I'm going to have to get another one. Do you think it's likely that booster shots are going to be part of the equation?
I don't know. It's one possibility that some of the manufacturers have talked about. Or it's possible that we find out that this is very long lasting, or that you know get a repeat in 10 years. I think we're really in the stage of not knowing. But if it's consistent with some other vaccines in this class, it's likely to be long lasting. Again, relatively new. This is all emerging with a new novel virus. And so we're learning as we go. But, you know, you could choose not to laminate it. Some people are taking a picture of it and keeping it. On their phone. There are ways to handle that, but lamination could be one way to handle it.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Paul, who is calling from Concord, Vermont. Hey, Paul.
Hello.
Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you? I just wanted to, I listened to the press conference yesterday, and there was some conversation about why vaccination rates were lower in Orleans and in particularly Essex counties, where I am. And there's obviously multiple reasons, the rural nature of the area and demographics. But the other reason I was surprised wasn't mentioned is political. And the idea being that a lot of those areas went majority for Trump in the election. And it would seem to me it's no surprise then that we see lower vaccination rates. And I was wondering what, if anybody's thinking about strategies around that to shift that.
Yeah, Commissioner, how about question. That?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. We're both jumping in on these great questions at the same time. It's interesting. We saw recent research on vaccine hesitancy that came out just about 2 weeks ago, and it provided a lot of contrasts of different kinds of groups. But one of the contrasts it provided was on politics, too. So if you voted Democrat, the chance that you said yes to the question, I'll get a vaccine, was much higher than if you voted Republican. And in the last election, that was one of the categories they looked at. So in communication, in terms of vaccine programs or any public health program, we really do try to look at a target audience. And so one target audience might be folks who are living in more rural areas or folks who may have hesitancy, based on kind of political party affiliation. And then we do a little research to learn, okay, so who are the influencers with that group? It appears that a lot of the vaccine hesitancy, regardless of why you're vaccine hesitant or what group you fall into, is around concerns of safety and effectiveness. And so that is something we continue to hit through all kinds of media, through social media, on shows like this, through television, through print, and even through peer-to-peer networks, just continuing to get the information out about the importance of this vaccine, the safety of it. We can already see the effectiveness with our deaths reducing and our hospitalizations reducing. That's a great question. And we are looking at different ways to hit different groups. And so we look at peer influence groups and try to engage them as partners as well to get the information out as best we can.
Commissioner, yesterday the Scott administration announced that all BIPOC Vermonters ages 16 and up, along with their family members, will be eligible for the vaccine starting tomorrow, I believe. Do we know how many Vermonters are affected by this change?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so it is, and their household members, just to be clear. So it's BIPOC, if you are Black, Indigenous, or a person of color in Vermont, you and anyone that you live with in your household will be eligible to receive a vaccine if you are a Vermont resident. And I don't have the number in front of me. We look at, for all of the projections that we do, we look at those who are 16 and over. But we also then take out the numbers who have already been vaccinated in the other age categories and in the high risk categories. So it is thousands and thousands, but I don't have an exact number of the number of BIPOC people that this affects. We are excited about the initiative. It is one way to try to level the playing field. We know there is real inequity in the vaccine uptake among this population and the white population. And we also know that if you are BIPOC, you are much more likely to be positive for COVID, three times higher the cases are. And there's all kinds of deeper reasons for that. There's structural kind of racism reasons. There's limited access to healthcare. There are trust issues around vaccines. So a lot of different reasons. And we're excited to be able to do this.
We did receive a couple of questions from listeners on Twitter who wondered, and perhaps you answered this, I'm not exactly sure, whether non-BIPOC Vermonters who share a household with BIPOC Vermonters will be eligible starting tomorrow.
Yes. If you live in a home with somebody who is a member of the BIPOC community, that whole household is eligible to be vaccinated. And the key there, the reason for that is in part the higher rate that we see, and in part because we see higher household contacts. So when we do have a case among this community, there are higher levels of household contacts. So this is one way to protect that household. And we also know that our communities of color are more likely to live in multi-generational households. And so there are a variety of reasons that bring us to this more tailored approach.
Why did it take this long for the state to put this policy in place?
We had a lot of different priorities to weigh along the way. I mean, we knew that our first priority was preventing death and hospitalization. And it was very clear that death was most associated with age. And so that had to be the first way to go, which was getting the elderly Vermonters. We also knew we had to protect our healthcare population. That's the 1A. We also knew that high risk was a significant factor for hospitalization. And then as we shifted into other groups, we recognized at the same time as looking at our allocation and weighing all of the different priorities that the BIPOC population, again, was another important priority population. But it really is just about continual weighing of all the priorities. At the same time, we were trying to push to get kids back in school because we were hearing more and more about the significant mental health impact. So this is really about the amount we had, weighing those priorities, and doing the best we can. Earlier on, we did make some adjustments for this population. We moved to an all-household approach in order to get a little bit more access there. And then finally to this approach. I'm glad we're here. And I know that the community was pushing for this for a long time and may have had some frustration around it. And I appreciate their patience with us and their continued partnership with us.
Another change that the state announced recently was expanding vaccine eligibility to include caregivers and the parents of medically compromised children. We've had some reports from listeners that the process of signing up is somewhat complicated and that the system seems to be asking what is the health condition of the parent as opposed to the child. Are you familiar with this process?
I am, yes. There was an error in the way the registration system was set up for this purpose. A lot of these things are happening very quickly. We have large teams and a lot of folks working late into the night, and this was just an error on our part. And so right now, as we fix that error, we're asking parents of medically fragile children to simply answer the question as it's written with a yes, and to go in and get that appointment. And we will make the adjustment as soon as we can to clarify that it's about their child. But for now, if you're a parent of a medically fragile child, you can go into that high risk. If that question is still like that, I don't know if they fixed it yet. I know they're on it. You can go ahead and just answer yes as though it's for you. And then you can also call the call center if you have questions as well.
Good to know. Thank you. Let's go back and talk to Randy in Colchester. Hey, Randy, welcome to the program.
Hello, Commissioner. So my story is I am in the AstraZeneca study group, and I didn't know whether I had received the placebo or the vaccine. I've taken both doses. My second dose was on 1 January, January 5th. I didn't feel anything. I just felt only felt a little bit of pressure from the injection. 11 days after I had my second dose, I went on my own, because they don't tell you whether you have the placebo or the vaccine, and on my own, I went and had an antibody test. The antibody test came back negative, so I assumed I had the placebo. Last Thursday, I made an appointment to get the vaccine. I contacted AstraZeneca to let them know that that I made an appointment. They asked me to do that, and they reopened up my case. So I have two questions. One is, when she opened up the case and let me know, she let me know that I did have the vaccine and not the placebo. So I was wondering why the test came back. My test came back negative when they gave me the vaccine. The second question I have is, I've made my appointment, and I'm wondering, I would like to keep my appointment, and what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, those are interesting questions. How many days after the final dose did you get the antibody test?
11 days after my second dose.
Okay. And I don't know if AstraZeneca guidelines are different, but we state for the other vaccines that 14 days after is full. So I don't know the guidelines on AstraZeneca. So it's possible that you did not have sufficient time to build an antibody response, but I'm not certain. I think I would have to refer you back to the AstraZeneca study group. Because AstraZeneca, we're not using that in Vermont at this time. It hasn't been cleared. So I think I would have to refer you back to them on guidance as to whether or not you should move forward with another vaccine. It sounds like they believe that you had the vaccine. They're confirming that you did. It sounds like you're concerned that Maybe you had it, but maybe you're one of the people for whom it wasn't effective. So I would probably have to refer you back there at this time. And after you get an answer from them, try to check in with our vaccine call center, and they may be able to elevate it, and they may be able to get you an answer there. That number for the vaccine call center is 855-722-7878. But your first bet would probably go back to AstraZeneca, the study and the connection there, explain what's happened and get their thoughts.
Randy, thanks for your phone call. Let's turn to Cynthia, who's calling from Calais. Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to the program.
Hi. My question is if the health department, I haven't heard of people about this, about Geert Vanden Bosch, that's G-E-E-R-T, Vanden, V-A-N-D-E-N, Bosch, B-O-S-S-C-H-E. He is not against vaccines. In fact, he was a head developer of vaccines in Germany. He worked on Ebola in Sierra Leone. He's a virologist, a vaccinologist, and he is pleading for to the WHO. He's made this very public to stop the mass vaccination campaign until there is more scientific debate. And I have been watching his videos, and he has explained the biology around this and his deep concerns about the compromise to your innate immune system for the specific immunity that you get with these vaccines, which are only increasing the mutations.
Commissioner, are you familiar with this information?
I'm familiar with the name, and we know that there are some people out there who may have a medical background who do speak out against the vaccination program, who have concerns. We feel really confident. The CDC is very clear on this. The preponderance of the medical and healthcare community is very clear on the importance and the safety of these vaccines. And I believe the last statement, she said that somehow having the vaccine increases the mutations. There is no evidence that becoming vaccinated somehow would increase the chance of mutations. And so, again, we of course hear about people speaking out against, but again, I'd really ask people to look at the peer-reviewed research, which is clear and supportive, and the emerging research and the CDC. And that's who we count on, and that's who we trust.
And Commissioner, I have to believe we were talking earlier about some people with certain political beliefs not wanting to get vaccinated. There are other people, as Cynthia mentioned, who have some health concerns about the vaccination process, others with medical concerns. What's the strategy of the health department to try to reach out to folks who may be very skeptical about this vaccination program?
Well, we have a strategy that involves a lot of different avenues. As I mentioned before, we do a lot of work on social media. The press conferences are another way. We distribute information through the healthcare network. So we've got a lot of healthcare providers who really also get the updated information through health advisory notices. And so we send out a HAN, it's called, anytime there's new information. If there were any concern or safety concern, the healthcare network would also get it immediately, and we would share that as well. We also provide all the links to CDC and the latest information electronically. Again, you know, for people who aren't on the internet, we try to use radio, we try to use newspaper. So just a variety of ways to get information out. And again, you know, we're not going to reach everyone. Some people will feel very strongly that that's not right for them. And of course, at the end of the day, people do have the choice. I would ask, though, people that who are leaning away from getting the vaccination to really, you know, do a little more research, but also really look at some of the more reputable sources for their information. Because, of course, if you want to find information to support your opinion, you always can. But look at the other side if you have concerns, and see where we're coming from here. It is unfortunate that I think the last administration did a lot of work to undermine the vaccination. But even President Trump, who very much spoke against a lot of the CDC regulations, ultimately got vaccinated as well. And so I think that was harmful. And I think this administration is a lot more clear about the importance of vaccines, but even those who may have spoken against it at high levels themselves were vaccinated, which I think speaks a lot to people's ultimate belief in the power of vaccination and this vaccine.
Commissioner, we're almost out of time, but I'm wondering, are there a couple of things you're keeping your eye on in the next week or two, factors that will be really important to measure Vermont's success against the pandemic?
Can you repeat that one more time? I'm going to try to catch what you're asking.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there are a couple of factors or a couple of issues that you're keeping your eye on in the next week or two that will give you some sense of whether or not Vermont has been successful in dealing with the pandemic.
I think the two factors we're keeping our eye on are the case rates. Obviously, we do expect that they will, you know, be high on some days. We've got some fluctuation, but we're keeping our eye on that. And then our vaccination rates. You know, we've had really good uptake, but we have a few areas where the uptake is a little lower. So we're looking at more creative ways to make sure that we've got uptake that's consistent, because the key to success here, in addition to doing all the right things right now and remaining protected, is to really get as many people vaccinated as possible. And so for those areas that have lower rates, we really want to look, or those communities or those populations, we really want to look at what might be holding them back and how we can help them.
Well, we've touched on a lot of important COVID questions today. Many, many thanks to Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan for taking the time to be on the program today. Commissioner, we really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Take care.